Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Ranking of the Stars, a podcast in which I, Jack Dielobobolik, and my lovely, luscious, lunches on me today, wife.
Hi, I'm Emmeline Dielobobolik.
Watch in chronological order every single movie that has won the Oscar for Best Picture, usually.
But not today.
Today, we've come to the end of another decade, and so it is our 1960s retrospective.
And we get to give our own awards to the 10 movies that we watch for this decade.
Yep, fuck the Academy, we're the real authority.
Yeah.
The final line on who is the best and worst and what was the most memorable. Did the 60s live up to their full psychedelic reputation?
I think we've already answered that question, that I was a definite no.
You're destroying the illusion. So, same categories as last time, with the inclusion of best song.
Yeah.
Because right? This decade was stuffed with musicals.
Yep.
It is our way of burying our head in the sand. We buried our head in the music this decade.
Oh. Which, honestly, I think that was nice. You know, some of the musicals were... I didn't like West Side Story as much as you did, but the other ones were great.
Yeah.
So...
a lot of memorable songs.
It deserved a category.
Yeah.
Well, should we announce the categories before we start?
Sure.
All right. And I promise I will take turn this time, because in the 1950s, I think I announced all the categories by myself first.
Made progress.
We've made progress. All right. The first one will be best male character.
Then best female character.
Worst male character.
Worst female character.
Best visuals overall.
Best visuals specific scene.
Most stylish.
Best song.
Best writing.
Quote of the decade.
Worst moment of the decade.
And finally, the best moment of the decade.
Yeah, because we gotta end on a positive note here.
Yep. Yeah, let's get right into it.
All right, so for best male character... we have Joe Buck from Midnight Cowboy.
Not a real cowboy, but one hell of a stud.
Yeah.
Next, we have Virgil Tibbs from In the Heat of the Night.
Eliza's dad from My Fair Lady.
Who has a real name, but...
he probably has a real name. We just didn't go into it. He's Eliza's dad.
Eliza's dad. Mr. Fagan from Oliver.
And Rico from Midnight Cowboy.
Rico.
Yeah. He's Mr. Doolittle, Eliza's dad, because Eliza's last name is Doolittle.
Yeah, if only he had his PhD. Could have been Dr.
Doolittle. Dr. Doolittle.
We were so close.
Yep.
Is there a single animal in that movie he could have talked to? Aside from the human animals.
I don't remember. Technically, there are horses, but we don't see them on screen.
Yeah, I don't think you ever see those horses.
No.
Those are some fake-ass coconut horses.
Yep.
Where they're just banging the halves together to make the clip-clop noises.
Yep.
All right. Who are you taking off first?
Oh.
Who's getting voted off the island?
Rico.
Yeah.
I really don't like his character.
Wow, the cripple goes first, huh?
I'm sorry. This is not discrimination, though.
Let's get in the holiday spirit properly. Tiny Tim, you gotta go. And give me the crutch. You didn't pay it off.
He's a scumbag.
He's a scumbag in the way like the orphans and Mr. Fagin were scumbag. They're doing what they have to do to get by. Society has abandoned them.
I understand. He's still a scumbag to me.
He's a cripple. How dare you?
He's a cripple, but being a cripple
make you a saint. Doesn't alleviate you from being a dick.
I was gonna say it doesn't add to his shittiness. He's just a shitty character.
He'd be shitty with it and shitty without it.
Probably.
Yeah. All right. I can stand to get rid of Rico. He was kind of just there to pad out the list.
Yeah.
If I'm being honest.
Who are you going to take off next?
I'm going to go for the jugular, and I'm going to take off Virgil Tibbs.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yep.
I can see that.
He's a more... that would be the pick in some sort of official list where you gotta, you know, pay homage to the, oh, we've made progress and that kind of stuff. But we're not doing that shit here. Tibbs has gotta go.
Well, you know, who's talking about discrimination now? We're taking off the only African-American character in this list.
Mm-hmm. Looks like we're both in the wrong. Yeah, Tibbs, I mean, great performance.
Great performance, but he didn't have much of a personality.
Yeah, I think it was more of an issues movie than it was a character-driven story.
Yeah.
So that leaves us with Joe Buck, Mr. Doolittle, and Mr. Fagan.
You know who I'm going to take off next.
Joe Buck?
Yes.
Oh!
I'm sorry. Again, not much of a character to me.
I would argue that point. I think he has a lot of character.
Really?
Yeah. He's very naive and troubled, and all the twisted sexual trauma he has in him. He doesn't articulate it very well, but you can see the effect it has on him. There's depth to that character, even if he doesn't, even he is not himself aware of that
depth.
There's
depth, but he looks more to me just like a stereotype. There's nothing original about this guy.
Well, yeah, that's part of the character, is that he's trying to live up to a stereotype to escape his trauma.
I don't know. While we were watching the movie, like, there was...
How can you not be...
I didn't feel any attachment to the character.
Guess who I am? Me! He's a charming knucklehead.
He's definitely a lovable knucklehead, but...
Yep.
Not enough character.
Not enough to compete with the true heavy hitters, which are Mr. Fagan and Mr. Doolittle.
Yeah.
Between these two, damn. Eliza's dad is just a joy every time he's on screen.
Yeah, he's a comedic relief, but he's not necessarily like the best male character.
Both of these, Mr. Fagan and Mr. they steal the respective movies that they're in.
Yeah.
And I wish those respective movies had been about them.
I know.
Instead of the boring-ass main characters in both cases.
Fagan has some shitty qualities, though.
Yeah, but...
But again, he's a lovable...
He's surviving.
Yeah, like, he's surviving.
He is what society has made him into. He fell through the cracks and he became the animal he had to be to survive.
He does love the children,
yeah,
though.
He cares about the kids.
Yeah.
He can move amazingly. He cares. He's the Rat King. He's got good dance moves. He's got good songs.
He's protecting them. He's willing to stand up to Bill Sykes, even though he knows very well that it could end up, like, killing him.
Yeah, my opinion of him would be much lower if he was a coward and folded under the pressure that put Sykes on him. But
he's willing to stand up for the kids, for himself, and for other people who are in trouble.
Yeah. Willing to look the predator in the eye and not back down.
I like that.
Yeah, props to Mr. Fagan. I think I would probably lean more in his direction for taking it.
I think so, too.
Given that Mr. Doolittle is, as amazing as he is mostly comedic relief.
He's a happy idiot who just happened to, you know, get into some money and...
He's a jolly drunk.
Yeah,
the best exactly. kind of drunk.
And that's all he'll ever do, you know. He's a jolly drunk who's gonna keep getting paid, and keep going to the bar and sing his songs, and that's it.
Yep, good enough for a silver medal in the 60s, but I think Mr. Fagan takes the gold.
Yes.
Best male character of the decade, Mr. Fagan.
Yeah.
From Oliver, the Rat King.
I'm happy with that.
Yeah, he was great.
I'm happy with that.
That actor absolutely should have been way more famous than he was.
He didn't do that many movies.
No.
Remember, we looked him up and he was probably in like less than 20 movies?
Yeah. Tragically short career.
Yeah. Yeah, because by the time he was in Oliver, he was probably already... He looked like he could be in his late 50. 40s, early 50s.
I have 50s, 60s is where I would put him. Yeah. Crime. Crime against art. Dig this man's corpse up and give him more work. Best female character. Slim
Pickings.
Slim Pickings this decade for female characters.
For best female characters.
Yeah.
Like, there's plenty of bad ones, but...
I think that's the case for both genders in every decade. There's always more bad apples than there are good ones.
Yeah.
So we have Anita from West Side Story.
We have Nancy from Oliver.
And Maria from The Sound of Music. So, everybody's going home with a medal. The worst you can do is bronze.
Yeah.
I did the last cut, so you get to be the first in this one.
Oh.
I think I know who it's gonna be.
I'd say Anita from West Side Story.
Anita?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
She was annoying. She didn't give a great performance, but she was still very annoying to me.
Annoying?
Yeah.
She was spicy. She wasn't annoying.
She was nagging.
Oh my goodness. Betraying the sisterhood with these stereotypes. Just a nagging bitch. Heard it here first.
You heard it here first. Exactly.
We gotta come back to this.
Okay.
I like Anita a lot.
So you were gonna take Nancy off?
Yes.
Okay.
I think Nancy is clearly the weakest link in this list.
She doesn't get as much attention, I think, though. I think the thing that goes against her for this category is, like, she's got good intentions, she cares about the kids, but she doesn't get enough screen time and enough attention being paid to her in the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And her becoming the stereotype of just... Oh, the man is a brute, but he needs me, and I can fix him, and that's not best female character material.
Yeah.
That's some weak shit attitude. So, we can agree to both put our hands on the club and bludgeon Nancy.
Bludgeon her one more time.
Yeah, the way Bill Sykes did. Sorry, Nancy. She gets the bronze. And I personally like Anita better than Maria, but I'm not going to die on that hill, so Anita can get the silver.
But you said let's come back to Anita, so tell me and our listeners what you like about Anita so much.
She's the hottest lady we've had so far.
That should not be a criteria.
She's a strong, independent woman. She sticks to her values. She stands up for what she believes in. She's got a good singing voice, great dance moves, stylish. She's the whole package.
I'll give you the strong singing voice and the dance moves and all that. I'm not there with you about the strong, independent woman, though, because she still relies a fair bit on the guys. Yeah,
she pushes back against them.
She pushes back a little bit.
She's got her own opinions,
but I think she still has a very traditional mentality, though. Like, she's still very much against Maria going with the white boy.
Is that racism, though, or is it just the fact that she understands that it's going to cause a bunch of fucking trouble?
I would say a little bit of both, because she expresses some of her opinions about the white guys, and so I think there's a little bit of both. She understands that it will cause trouble, but I think she's also she's been raised in that mentality and has. It's ingrained in her.
She does have that t-shirt that says white men can't jump. Yeah. Silver medal. So gold goes to Maria.
Yeah.
Sound of Music.
Yeah.
For putting forward the insane idea that we should love our children.
I love her. She's so sweet. There's just nothing apart from the character. Like, I've always admired Julie Andrews. Like, I loved her in Mary Poppins too. Like, she always has characters that are deeply caring about others and very selfless.
Yep.
And that's one thing that I really admire in Maria and The Sound of Music too, is that she very rarely acts in a way that's just for herself. So.
Yeah, selfless, full of sunshine and rainbows.
Yeah.
Yep, bringing joy to a cold, miserable world.
And the best part about her is that she loves people in the way that they deserve to be loved. Like, with the kids, they weren't allowed to go necessarily outside of the house or have clothes to go and play in nature. And she's providing all of that for them.
Yeah, their dad was fucking marching them around the grounds and, like, make sure they breathe properly.
Yeah. But even with him, even with the captain, like, she's not, she doesn't approach him in a way that's, that could be disrespectful to, like, his late wife's memory or anything like that. Like, she's very careful to be, like, open to him, but not overbearing, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I like it. Yep. So, Maria.
Gold goes to Maria. Not West Side Story Maria.
The Sound of Music
Maria. The Sound of Music Maria. Two vastly different Marias.
Yeah. Worst male character. And the first item on the list here is really sort of that. An item, not specific.
An honorable character. Mention.
Honorable mention to all the bosses in the apartment, because they were fucking awful.
Yeah, no one of them is any worse than the others. Just collectively, they're just...
They're corrupt, they're sexist.
Yep, god-awful.
Selfish.
Mm-hmm. Living the high businessman dream.
Yeah. They can all go to hell.
And so, the next one, we get more specific with Bud Baxter, the main character of the apartment.
Yeah, we have Squire Western from Tom Jones.
Referred to as Sir Isaac Newton.
In the episode, yes.
For his hair. We have Professor Higgins from My Fair Lady.
Bill Sykes from Oliver.
Mr. Endicott from In the Heat of the Night.
And an honorable mention for King Henry in A Man for All Seasons.
Yep. A child in charge of a country.
Yeah.
Glad that doesn't happen anymore.
So, obviously, the King Henry was just an honorable mention.
Yep.
So.
Whose turn is it to cut?
Mm.
We collectively clobbered Nancy. And then things got a little fast and loose.
Yes.
I think we're due for a reset here.
Okay. Probably Bud Baxter.
Yeah. If you weren't going to do it, I was going to do it.
Because he's...
He's just spineless.
Yeah, he's spineless. He doesn't... He's not necessarily fundamentally bad. He's just... He's spineless. And he gets almost caught up in this thing that he set up because he's got... aspirations, yeah. I guess, professionally, and wants to climb the ladder, but everything just ends up falling apart, for him, yeah. Or around him.
He's willing to overlook abuse because he doesn't want to rock the boat.
Yeah.
You know, the common garden variety type of evil that everyone is.
There are some moments, though, where he's not necessarily fair to his love and to the love interest, though, like, when he still... calls the boss.
Yeah, and, he's way too lenient with the boss.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, still trying to cover for him after he's caused someone to try and commit suicide. Yeah, well, he sucks. But there are people that suck more.
Yeah, there are people that are far worse on this list.
Yep. I'm gonna take off Bill Sykes.
What?
Yeah, I mean, what did he do? He stole from people, he killed a lady... I don't think that measures up with the other people on this list.
He was abusing children abusing his lady.
He killed his lady.
Yeah.
He tried to abuse. Like, the worst thing we ever see him attempt is to hit Oliver with a belt, and he doesn't even succeed in that.
Still.
He's violent, sure.
Yeah.
But I don't think violence... measures up with Mr. Endicott or the casual cruelty of Squire Western.
I don't know. I would have taken Squire Western next.
Like, Squire Western?
He's shitty, but...
Oh, he's so shitty. He's shitty to women. He's shitty to animals. he actually abuses an animal on screen with the dog. He's the one who holds up the deer's head.
I know.
And jiggles it. He sucks.
I know, but he doesn't... It's weird. He doesn't come on screen, like, long enough, I think, for me to...
He's one of the main characters of that movie. I think your brain is... protecting itself.
My brain is not protecting itself. It's just the abuse from Bill Sykes to me was way worse.
But that was pretend abuse.
The violence.
That guy actually threw water in a dog's face. That really happened.
All right.
Dog didn't deserve that.
All right.
Bill Sykes was nice to his dog.
All right, I hear you. he was going to hit the dog at some point, and his dog already like had to take some shit because of him. Like the dog only has one eye. He's got scars and stuff.
I don't think those scars came from Bill Sykes.
We don't know.
I think those scars just came because they live on the street, and living on the street's a rough and tumble life.
I assume that the dog got those scars, you know, because he was fighting for Bill Sykes.
Could be.
The movie just doesn't confirm.
So, we taking off Bill Sykes, so we keep him. He's not going to be the worst.
No, he's not going to be the worst. Yeah.
So, I'll cut Bill Sykes, and then you'll go for Squire Western?
Yes.
Leaving us with Professor Higgins and Mr. Endicott.
Well, hold on. First, I'm going to explain about Squire Western. He's misogynistic. Cruel to animals.
Yeah, vulgar. Remember that, the eating scene where he's like chewing with his mouth open and is like going everywhere and like getting in his hair and stuff? Yep.
Yeah. He's sucking on a bone or something, and it kind of like it looks more like he's sucking on a dick.
A brutish, toadish man.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, but again, to me, like I didn't really pay a whole lot of attention. I didn't give him a lot of like brain space.
Yep.
So.
The casual cruelty is sometimes worse than the. The directed...
The actual violence?
Directed intentional cruelty.
Yeah. Yeah, he was more disgusting than, like...
Evil?
Yeah, more disgusting than evil.
All right. So then, Professor Higgins and Mr. Endicott.
Both of them just exhibit different kinds of, like, discrimination against other people.
Arrogance.
And shittiness. Yeah. Yeah, Higgins was like his just blatant dismissal of Eliza as a human being almost.
You are what I made you.
Yeah, she's an experiment to him. She's not, she's somebody that he's going to try to mold into his vision of what a woman should be.
Yep.
So he's horrible in that regards, is that. Yeah, he doesn't see her as a human being.
Yep.
Doesn't care about her feelings, doesn't care about who she is. She's just an experiment.
But Mr. Endicott is running multiple experiments.
Yes.
With not just one person, but a whole ethnic group of people.
Yeah.
And has very strong opinions that he is more than willing to share on this subject.
Yeah. And then has the guts to... act as the victim when Mr. Tibbs slaps him back.
God damn, I used to be racist and nobody would get on to me for it.
Like, he visibly, I don't know if that's just the actor or if that was written in the script. Like, when Mr. Tibbs slaps him, he looks like he's about to cry.
Yep.
Like, you got nothing to cry for.
No, he's lost his power.
Yeah. He's just ashamed.
Yeah.
And that's what makes him almost cry on screen. It's just the shame of having been slapped by an African American man.
Yep. The illusion of his power shattered with a single slap.
Yeah.
Yep.
They're kind of equal to me, like, in their shittiness. Because they both treat people like they're so inferior to them. And, like, they're basically nothing.
And I think Endicott's worse, but the thing about it is that the movie that Endicott is in understands that he's terrible, whereas the movie that Higgins is in does not understand that he's terrible.
Yes. Yeah, that's the difference between them, which is, for Higgins, it's even more horrible.
But that's not the character himself.
That's the movie.
That's the spirit of the times.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would go for Mr. Endicott.
Yeah.
gets the gold.
I agree with that.
Racist of the decade. Here's your golden cotton plant, Mr. Endicott. And then next we have worst female character. Starting with the other Maria, the one from West Side Story.
Then Eliza from My Fair Lady.
Dolores Purdy from In the Heat of the Night.
And Mrs. Fitzpatrick's friend, the cougar lady from Tom Jones.
Yeah, this is the lady who said, what was it? Oh, are you afraid of the word rape?
Yeah.
Yeah, that lady. We tried to go through the cast list and see exactly who this woman was, but there are so many women in dresses that look exactly alike in that movie. Yeah. And have names like Mrs. Shelby or Mrs. Allen or Mrs. Seaworthy.
So she's Mrs. Fitzpatrick's friend.
Yeah, it's it's the lady who said the shitty thing about rape.
Yeah.
My turn to cut?
Yeah.
I'd take off Maria. She's just, every decade, every retrospective, we have one of these on the worst female character where they're just a nothing. The problem with it is they're just not a fucking character at all.
Yeah, it was more that she was an annoying character. She has like one good line at the end of the movie, and yeah. That's about it.
Yeah, her performance at the end is great. Up until that point, she's a person-shaped hole in the screen.
Yeah.
She just, every scene in that movie with her and the love interest is the worst scene in the movie.
And that's not the character itself, but the actress wasn't even doing the singing in the movie. She had somebody doing voiceover for her singing parts.
Yeah, it was Nixon's wife.
Yeah. So.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Yep.
I'm okay with cutting her from the list.
She was nothing and she deserves nothing. Who are you going to cut?
Probably cut Eliza from My Fair Lady. Because, again, it's not that she's fundamentally bad or evil. It was more that she was such an annoying character for, like,
so
more than half of the movie.
So dreadful. Just yeah. Anytime she opens her mouth, because they make her squawk.
Especially at the beginning of the movie when she's still learning to speak in the like proper accent that Mr. Higgins is trying to teach her. Her voice is nasal and it's high pitched.
Nails on a chalkboard.
Oh my god!
What's all this then, Governor?
Just like, who the fuck listened to that and said, yes, this should be distributed to audiences. This is a good idea.
So
this again, is a quality product.
Yeah. So again, not fundamentally bad.
Yeah.
Just very annoying character.
Eliza gets the Oh My God, What Were You Thinking award.
Yeah.
For most obnoxious sounding voice we have encountered so far.
Oh, definitely.
Hope to God it's the worst we'll ever encounter. Leaving us with Dolores Purdy and Mrs. Fitzpatrick. And it's my turn. I would cut Mrs. Fitzpatrick. I think Dolores Purdy wins this. She is Satan. She is looking for trouble.
Yeah.
She is out to fuck someone's life up.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have.
Well, granted, Mrs. Fitzpatrick's friend also was looking for her to fuck somebody's life up when she invited her male friend to just openly rape her.
You're right, but the thing is that I think Miss Fitzpatrick was a one-off in her instance. Dolores Purdy, this is her entire career. Like,
that. Yeah, that's true.
This is her life.
We don't necessarily get to see a lot of instances in a movie, but we get to hear about them.
Yep.
So.
Steinbeck has that quote about, I believe that there are monsters born into the world, the human parents.
Oh my gosh.
I think Dolores Purdy was just, she was broken from the get-go. There ain't no fixing what she's got. You see a woman like that, you need to run. Dolores Purdy is evil.
She is rotten to her core.
Yes, and you can just see it in her eyes. That liquid evil gaze.
Yeah.
Sliding over everyone. What destruction can I cause here?
Yeah, just the way she talks to people, the way she sits, the way she just plans every... It sounds just like she's planning every little detail and paying careful attention to people's behavior so that she can use it against them.
Yeah, she's actively manipulating everyone she talks to.
Yeah.
And not even trying to hide it. She's only on screen for, what, less than 10 minutes?
Yeah.
And she's one of the most memorable parts of that movie because she's so fucking evil.
The whole, like, enjoying, where do they go to a cemetery to have sex? Like, and,
you ever felt the cold marble on your body? She's an evil version of Blanche from Golden Girls.
Yeah. Because at least Blanche from Golden Girls can make anything sexy, I think. But this one is like, no, this is fucked up.
Blanche is just looking to have a good time. This lady is, the screwing up people's lives is the point.
Yes.
Like, she gets enjoyment from the pleasure. She gets more enjoyment from ruining people's lives.
So, Dolores Purdy.
Dolores Purdy.
Worst female character.
Yep. Of the 60s.
Sounds about right. Next category is best visuals overall.
Might be one of the most contentious.
Okay.
We got In the Heat of the Night.
Midnight Cowboy.
The Sound of Music.
Oliver.
And Lawrence of Arabia. It's your turn to cut. Here's the knife.
I'm gonna say... In the Heat of the Night.
In the Heat of the Night?
Yeah.
It was, yeah, a lot of neon lights and...
Yeah, there were a lot of good shots.
Yeah, like that him walking off into the darkness.
They did a lot of really good establishing shots.
When they're framed at the diner with the big neon eat in between them.
Yeah. Yeah. They definitely did a good job at setting up the scenes and setting up the atmosphere of a little town and what it would feel like in the 60s.
Yes. The decaying South.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so it's, to me, I admired the movie more for the atmosphere that it sets up than for the visuals.
Yeah. I get that. All right. I would take off Lawrence of Arabia. Those desert shots are beautiful, but like, you've seen one desert shot, you've seen them all. You know, it's a one trick, not pony, but one trick camel.
One trick camel.
In this case,
yeah, I get that.
It's like, oh, look at the desert. It's big. It's, you know, oh, it's vast. Oh, an ocean of sand. Yawn. Oh, the sunset's beautiful. Snore. Lawrence has got to go.
Yeah. I'm not arguing. No. Not arguing against that.
Leaving us with Midnight Cowboy, The Sound of Music, and Oliver. The knife is yours.
You're not going to like it. I'm going to take off Midnight Cowboy.
Midnight Cowboy?
Yes. Let me explain. I think it's one of those movies where I kind of like recognized some of the places that they were in, or I recognized the atmosphere that they were in New York, and for that reason, to me, I wasn't as impressed as for other movies because it felt familiar. It didn't feel like we were... It didn't feel to me like I was traveling somewhere and I had to discover the environment of the movie. It just felt very familiar.
Yeah, but all that experimental stuff they do with the black and white and the dream sequences and the party with the cells and stuff on the wall, that red room.
That's true.
With the picture.
That's true.
It was stylish as hell.
But that's not... We're not in style. Yeah. In most stylish, though.
We're in best visuals.
We're in best visuals.
Yep.
For most stylish, I definitely give it to you. The Midnight Cowboy will be a strong contender. But for best visuals overall...
The visuals were too traumatic.
Not... I wrote my whole entire dissertation on trauma, so yep. I can deal with traumatic.
We got to see butts. What's a better visual than that?
I like other butts, not John Voight's butts.
Yeah.
Leaving The Sound of Music and Oliver. The
Sound of Music and Oliver.
It's your turn.
I would cut Sound of Music and give it to Oliver. Oliver... Yeah. Yeah, the sets and the color in Oliver, how people were dressed, the like Bill Sykes having that smoosh down hat and people. Yeah, Oliver was like a live action cartoon. It was great.
Yeah, I'm okay with that because I am going to be rooting for Sound of Music in the next category, I think.
Best visuals overall, Oliver, which we'll be talking more on because it's all the same people in the next category, too.
Yeah. Oliver had that feel to me like there was so much effort that went into everything in the movie. In the costumes, in recreating the city, in creating like very different feels of the city.
Yeah, the swamp area. Yeah,
the swamp area. And then the
regular area and then the heaven area.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it definitely had a lot more... character, and it felt like there was so much effort into it in crafting every scene. So
their caricature of the class structure: you live in heaven, you live in the normal city, you live in the swamp.
Yep.
Next category is best visual specific scene, and first contender there is the end of West Side Story with the lights coming down on Maria on the basketball court. That like quasi-religious feeling ceremony.
Yeah. Then next is Bill Sykes' shadow on the wall as he enters the movie.
Yep. The party in Midnight Cowboy.
The chase in Midnight Cowboy. And can you let's remind people of what the chase is.
The chase is after he understands that he's been scammed by Rico after their first meeting. He has that fantasy about chasing him all throughout New York.
Yep.
And the black and white and cutting him, like, chasing subway cars and cornering Rico in phone booths and fantasizing about strangling him and stuff. And the aerial shot opening of The Sound of Music when the camera sweeps down from the heavens.
Yeah.
Onto Julie Andrews spinning around with her arms out like a helicopter.
The hills are alive in The Sound of Music.
The hills are alive with The Sound of Music.
Yep.
Whose turn is it?
I believe it's yours.
All right. Then the chase in Midnight Cowboy. Experimental, black and white, but also, I think going back to what you were saying, it's still New York.
Yeah.
So an artsy, experimental vision of New York, but... not enough.
Not enough. That's a hard knife to to throw on this one.
Yeah, we're definitely getting more masterful with our visuals in this decade.
Yeah.
The art is improving.
Yeah. If the plots might not be improving, but the visuals and the camera and editing techniques are definitely improving.
I would argue the plots are improving too. Talking about juvenile delinquency and West Side Story and the transference of hate and sexual trauma in Midnight Cowboy.
Yeah.
We're making progress.
I guess maybe not the plots, but the writing sometimes is not, like, it's not up there with the topics that they're trying to approach. Okay. I'm hesitating between the party and the lights coming down on Maria. They're widely different, though.
Yeah. Argue the party maybe too broad for this category, even because it's a whole.
Yeah, because it's long. It's a whole series of scenes.
Yeah, a whole series of scenes.
Yeah.
Might be disqualified on technicality.
It might also be like the party was fun in a way, just because of the. It provided like a change of atmosphere also in the movie.
Yeah.
So that's what that's the whole purpose of that scene is, like it brings a change of pace. But it, yeah.
Yeah, an excuse for things to get crazy and for them to do different camera tricks and have wild lights and the red room and
yeah. So I guess the party can go.
All right. The party is gone. So then I'll take off the light coming down on Maria on the basketball court. I think the most striking scene of that whole movie, like, is a really interesting tonal shift in those last few minutes to where it, becomes this Shakespearean tragedy kind of thing with the light coming down from the heavens.
It is technically based on Romeo and Juliet, so yes. I think I'm more attached to the line that she says in that scene than afterwards than the visuals, even though it was beautiful.
It was, but not beautiful enough.
So that leaves us with Bill Sykes' shadow or the aerial shot opening of The Sound of Music.
Ah! Goddamn. These are both incredible. How do we choose between our children?
I have the knife.
We both have the knife at this point.
We both have the knife. Okay, well then let's talk about it.
Yeah.
Let's talk about what you like in each of them.
They are both incredible introductions to characters.
Yeah.
But Maria's just, it's like a lightning bolt out of the sky. Like, it blooms in all its glory immediately. Where Bill Sykes is that slow, like, rising up out of the grave. What an amazing introduction to a villain. His shadow just creeping up on the wall.
It builds up tension.
Yep. And then the whole thing of him slowly taking the stuff out of his jacket and not saying anything. Goddamn, it's perfect. Both of these are, like, perfect introductions to the character they're presenting.
I know.
My argument for Bill Sykes is that this is the category for best visuals. He does not talk. It is purely visual.
Okay.
For his. Whereas Maria, she's got the song to help her out.
And it's a little on the nose.
The hills. But
yeah, the hills are alive. Yeah, I love the aerial shot in The Sound of Music. Like, it starts slowly without the music, where you're just, you know, flying over the hills and looking at the lake and just setting up the scene in Austria. Kind of a little bit lost because you don't know what's happening for a few seconds. But visually beautiful and, like, really calming from the beginning. And kind of, like, I've never been to Austria before. So it just, I was a little bit starstruck with the background that it was offering from the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
I
said it in that episode, and I'll say it again. I've seen that scene parodied all throughout popular culture, and I understand why. It is... Yeah. It's incredible.
It's beautiful.
Like a blast of sunshine in your face.
Yeah. But
whereas Bill Sykes is just like a slow growl that builds.
It gives the right entrance to both characters, but I think I'm leaning towards Bill Sykes.
Bill Sykes does not need to say shit.
Yeah, he doesn't need to say a word. His looks, his appearance, this guy was, like, perfectly cast.
Yep.
And just the slow build-up of his character coming on screen is amazing.
Yep. His reputation precedes him. Winner for best visual specific scene is Bill Sykes' shadow on the wall as he enters the movie.
Yeah. Most stylish.
Most stylish.
The next category.
As always, we need to remind the audience that the definition of stylish is whatever we feel like it is at the time.
Yeah. And the first one on the list is Midnight Cowboy.
Second is In the Heat of the Night.
Then Oliver.
And West Side Story. I Have the Knife.
I Have the Knife?
I Have the Knife.
Really?
I think.
Who took out the
first? You can have the knife if you want it.
You had the knife first in the last category. You took out the chase first.
Yep.
So, I got the knife.
All right. And no one is safe.
No one. I'm going to take out In the Heat of the Night first.
Oh, but that opening train.
I know.
With Ray Charles.
I know.
You're doing this to Ray Charles?
I'm sorry.
Spinning in his grave.
It's like, overall, it doesn't measure up to the other ones on this list.
It has spikes of style.
Yes.
Like the train sequence in the song and then the diner with the neon lights.
But it's not consistent throughout the movie.
You're right, it's not. It has its moments where it shines through, but
it did a great job, at having those little moments and at really having setting up the atmosphere of the South. But yeah, it wasn't consistent.
Yeah. Leaving us with Midnight Cowboy, Oliver, and West Side Story. This is rough.
Yes.
These are all incredibly stylish in their own different ways.
I mean, this is a small list already, so slim pickings for to choose from, and those are already good.
But all heavy hitters.
Yes.
I think overall this was definitely the most stylish decade.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Probably West Side Story, I think. It's stylish, but also going back to the thing where it's just New York. The costumes are nice, but I mean, their sets, I don't...
That's the thing. Most of the style in West Side Story comes from the costumes to me and the choreographed dance scenes and stuff like that. It's also not consistent throughout the movie. It's just those elements of the musical that are stylish.
And it doesn't come from the visuals so much as, the performances.
Yeah.
Yeah, not making as much use of the medium as they could.
Yeah.
Unlike Midnight Cowboy, which takes incredible use of the medium, is one of those movies that could only exist as a movie and nothing else.
Prop to West Side Story, though. Like, it was a really good... I've never seen the onstage musical, but I feel like this was a really, great adaptation. And, again, there are so many extras, so many people to direct, so just so many things to coordinate and choreograph. Like, it was overall, visually beautiful and stylish, but not enough.
Great movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just does not hold up with these other two heavy hitters. Come down to Midnight Cowboy and Oliver. Oof.
This feels like a crime to have to choose between those two.
Yeah,
it shouldn't be allowed.
Oh, they're approaching style in two different ways.
Yes.
Where Midnight Cowboy, it's the experimental, they're using the medium of film with the editing techniques and black and white and... Yeah.
Rather than for Oliver, most of it is in just the sets and the atmosphere of the scenes.
Yeah, craftsmanship. Yeah. I feel like this is finally forcing us to come to some sort of...
Of definition?
Definition of what style is, because Midnight Cowboy is about the editing and the use of light and flashback and narrative... style, and mm-hmm. Oliver is about the just raw craftsmanship of the sets and the color choices and the costumes. It's a much more practical style.
Which, I mean, again, doesn't mean that it has to be one or the other. It's just very different use of everything that goes into a movie to create a specific style.
Most stylish. Not necessarily best style, but most.
Yeah.
I think Midnight Cowboy has the most.
Yes.
Style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that it does a better job at creating its own atmosphere, its own... It's almost in a different category than some of the other movies we've watched. Because, yeah, it's so experimental.
Yeah.
Both in the topic, but also in just the way that it uses flashbacks and camera techniques and editing techniques and stuff like that. It's almost just in its own category here.
Dreams and fantasies and... black and white and red light and the even cutting to different aspect ratios when they're at the party with the people being interviewed on camera. Yep. Yeah. It pains me.
Sorry, Oliver.
Oliver was so good.
I know.
The amazing craftsmanship of Midnight Cowboy has the most style.
Yeah. I agree.
Moving on to our most packed category of the decade, best song.
Best song.
Which probably won't appear in every decade, but when we've got enough, it'll be there.
Mm-hmm.
And this decade, buddy, we've got enough. Starting with Get Me to the Church on Time from My Fair Lady. Pull out the stopper, let's have a whopper.
Another song from My Fair Lady with a little bit of luck.
I Have Confidence in Me,
mm-hmm.
from The Sound of Music. That's the one where she skips and clicks her heels together.
Yeah. My Favorite Things, The Sound of Music.
Yep. You Got to Pick a Pocket or Two from Oliver.
America from West Side Story.
G. Officer Krupke from West Side Story, which is the Golly Moses Naturally We're Punks song.
Yes. And Wouldn't It Be Loverly from My Fair Lady.
Yep. The most stuffed category. There are a bunch of songs this decade.
Yeah.
Not even half the ones we heard.
No, but these are the ones that got reactions out of us.
Yep. No umpapa here. Whose turn is it?
Yours, I believe.
Mine? All right, then... I'll just get out of the way. You Got to Pick a Pocket or Two. Like, it's...
That's the one you're cutting out?
It has the best performance from Mr. Fagan, the way he moves. But this is not best movement. This is best song, and it's not the best song out of the bunch. So, You Got to Pick a Pocket, and You Got to Get a Better Song.
But also, what makes a best song? Because it's got to be... The lyrics, the cleverness of the lyrics, but also, like, how it makes you feel.
Yeah, the song itself.
Yeah. Get Me to the Church on Time.
We're going to have to put a pin in that and come back to it.
Okay, then my other choice was going to be Wouldn't It Be Loverly from My Fair Lady.
Okay, that I can live with.
Okay, then let's take... It's sentimental, and it's like a really like the first moment in the movie where you get to see the like a different side of Eliza, because the first 5 minutes she's just being obnoxious.
It's the first time she doesn't squawk.
Yeah. And then in that song she's being more vulnerable, and you get to like feel for her. And feel for her dreams. So it's...
And you say, why don't you talk like this all the time?
Exactly. So it's more of an emotional song, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's the best song either.
Nope. Yeah, I like it. I have listened to it outside the movie.
We've sung it in our daily lives outside of the movie, too. Yep. So, yeah.
I Have Confidence in Me.
Oh, now you're going to break my heart.
Yeah. Well, it's either that or My Favorite Things. Which one would you rather me stab?
my favorite things.
Really?
Yeah. I love the song, but I loved the determination in I Have Confidence in Me. Like, she's giving herself a pep talk. She's getting ready to go and just, you know, picking herself up. And there's, I don't know. My favorite things is more to me like a lullaby. And I Have Confidence in Me is like, it's one of those songs that I've listened to when I'm like, I'm working out, when I'm running, and it just gives me, it pumps me up.
Yep.
And it has like really, I understand the feelings behind it. The, okay, I am scared of doing this, but I gotta do what I can to gather, to just muster up some confidence and be like, be the person that I can be.
Puts the fire in your blood.
Yeah.
All right. My favorite things is dead then.
Again, yeah, my favorite things to me. It's a cute song. It's
too cute.
It's a little, yeah.
Too sweet, too cute.
Over the top cute.
Yep. This is for grandmas.
But it's still, yeah, it's still
do
nice.
I look like a grandma?
Sometimes.
My beard's not long enough.
So, my turn?
Yep.
To knife something? I'm gonna go for... with a little bit of luck.
You're going for the best ones!
I'm sorry!
In my mind, this category is a fight between Get Me to the Church on Time and a Little Bit of Luck, and these are the ones you're trying to kill.
Yes, because those are not the ones I want to go for the gold.
They're so good. Out of all the songs on this list, those are the ones from My Fair Lady are the only ones I've listened to after we've watched the movie.
Then my next choice would be G. Officer Krupke.
All right. I'm cool.
Even it was really clever.
It was great.
It was really great. Social commentary.
Clever. Funny. All right, if the knife is mine, then I'm just going to finish off West Side Story and get rid of America.
Are you kidding me?
America. America. I ain't listened to it since the movie.
This was also a great song.
It was
really well written. Like the guys and the girls just like, you know, responding to each other through the song. I thought this was one of the, like, cleverest songs in the decade.
It's clever. I'm not arguing that.
It's got a catchy tune.
But the category is not cleverest song. It's best song.
Well, clever can be best.
It can.
You're gonna have to make a strong point for this. And mind you, you still have one to cut. We still have one to cut between Get Me to Your Church on Time and With a Little Bit of Luck.
So what do we currently have? Confidence in Me, America, A Little Bit of Luck, and Get Me to the Church on Time.
Yeah.
Get Me to the Church on Time and With a Little Bit of Luck. They're catchy. They're memorable. I sing them in day-to-day life. They are... Get Me to the Church on Time especially is just joyous. The whole bar is in on that song. He's just singing about being a jolly drunk. No? You're unmoved by all this? It's so good! It's borderline religious how good it is. It's almost like a hymn he's singing about being a drunk.
I have, like, deep feelings inside. I hear I am living the I like to be in America. No? All right, I will concede.
Concede on America.
I'll concede on America. So that leaves Get Me to Your Church on Time, With a Little Bit of Luck, and I Have Confidence in Me. You know I'm going to cut one.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but then you'll get the last knife and you're going to cut I Have Confidence in Me.
I mean, I think you're going to die on that hill, aren't you?
I will. I will fight as hard as I can for it. I'll knife with a little bit of luck. I was going for it earlier.
I would cut that one before, yes. Get Me to the Church on Time.
Okay. So
even though, oh God, that song is so good. You can walk the straight and narrow, but with a little bit of luck, you'll run amok. Yeah, it's fun. Both of his songs are just fun.
I know.
The most fun songs on this list. Remember fun? It used to exist back in the 90s, then it became a controlled substance. So what do we have left?
Get me to your church on time, or I have confidence in me.
I mean...
Is it really a choice?
Yeah, it's just come down to personal preference, really, which is the whole thing. But I don't have the personal investment in the Sound of Music that you do.
Yeah.
We have split categories before and had our own personal winners.
I think that this is one that that would deserve two winners, like one for you, one for me.
Yeah.
Because we're attached to those songs for very different reasons.
Yeah.
And I have known most of these songs, apart from America and West Side Story, like almost all of these songs were new to us. But I have confidence in me. Like, this is a song I've listened to since I was a kid.
Yeah, got you in your childhood.
Yeah.
Nothing will ever supplant it.
Yeah.
Yep. More, Get Me to the Church on Time is just this... this brilliant oasis in the middle of this miserable movie. Come into the bar and have a... get refreshed. Have a break. I've listened to it many a time in the car, driving to and from San Francisco. And it gets a smile every time. Feather and Tarmy, call out the army. But get me to the church on time.
Two winners for this one.
Yep.
Our next category is Best Writing.
Best Writing.
Starting with Midnight Cowboy.
Then In the Heat of the Night.
West Side Story.
Oliver.
And Lawrence of Arabia.
Who's got the knife?
You got the knife.
I got the knife.
I think.
Oh boy. West Side Story?
Yeah. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, clever in the songs, but weak parts.
Overly dramatic.
Yeah.
Unnecessarily dramatic.
Endearingly dramatic, some might say.
No, enduringly no.
When you have to spin around three times and then put your hand on a wall when something bad happens.
No, get that shit out.
I'm having a lot of emotions. We need to dance. Yep.
The characters weren't well written in. The relationships weren't well thought out or written as well. So
no, yeah. It's all about the songs.
Yeah.
And the songs are hit and miss in that movie.
Yeah. That song where he's just singing, Maria.
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 I just met a girl named Maria.
Yep. Yeah.
Boo.
Next, what am I going to knife out? Lawrence of Arabia? Well, it's Lawrence of Arabia or In the Heat of the Night?
That second one I might be okay with.
Did you think that the writing was, like, particularly good in Lawrence of Arabia?
I liked Lawrence of Arabia a lot more than you did.
Yeah, that's for sure.
I think Lawrence is a really interesting, complex character. I think they did a really good job with him.
Well, that's the thing. Like, they did a good job with him, but not...
Well, the whole... Yeah.
Not with the whole movie.
The thing about Lawrence of Arabia is a lot of it is understated, where they are exploring... ideas and themes of popular figures and narrative control and the myth of heroism,
mm-hmm.
but it's never explicitly stated. There's no, like, big denouncement, or there's no, you know, thesis that they present. It's just heroism is a myth constructed by the military so they can push their military agendas.
Yeah.
And there's no, like... there's no revelation or anything. It's just you get to watch this man's ambition curdle into trauma and terror and disillusionment. So, yeah, they could have done more with it. But the deep undercurrents of how fucked up hero myths are and how badly they can turn out.
So are you okay with me taking it out, or
I'd rather,
do we need to fight for it?
I'd rather take out in the heat of the night first.
All right.
And what am I going to cut? We're left with Midnight Cowboy, Oliver, and Lawrence. Oh, man.
They're kind of like all of your favorites from the decade.
I mean, yeah. I'll take out Lawrence. Yeah, if somebody's going to do it, I'd rather it be me. Die from a friendly hand. I won't let a stranger kill you, Lawrence. It's like how he had to mercy kill his boy servant.
Yeah.
The rebels are coming, Lawrence. We don't have time.
It's a gentle kill. You're not bludgeoning it.
Yes. Close your eyes and think of the rabbits.
That leaves Midnight Cowboy and Oliver.
Yep. Partners till our dying day.
Man, this is hard.
Living proof that crime does pay.
I mean, just as a whole, I liked Oliver more than I did Midnight Cowboy. So it's hard to, like, root. There were a lot of, like, dumb dialogues in Midnight Cowboy. Like, it didn't feel like this was particularly clever or that somebody gave two shits about making this a good script.
Well, they're just... The people in Midnight Cowboy are very realistically people and dumb in the way that people are dumb. So it's very natural sounding dialogue where they don't talk like movie people. They just talk like people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
I don't have to like that it's dumb.
But it's dumb in an insightful way.
It's dumb in an annoying way. Like, what is insightful about it?
Well, it shows you the difficulty that people have navigating their emotions. Like that scene specifically between him and Rico in the bedroom where you can tell that both of them are wary and suspicious of each other because of their life experiences, but mm-hmm. neither one of them has the emotional maturity to actually, you know, just openly talk about it and work through it, so they have to dance around each other in this really awkward way. What the hell are you after? I goddamn invited you, didn't I? We also got the, hey, I'm walking here, and the, come on, I'm a cripple. And the fantasy sequence in the resort, that counts as writing, right? You had to write that scene, even if there's no dialogue in it. Even though the same argument would apply to Oliver, where the silent entering of Bill Sykes is writing, counts as writing. Yeah, I'm not arguing in favor of Midnight Cowboy over Oliver. I'm just trying to defend Midnight Cowboy and saying it's not as dumb as you're portraying it. The rat on the lady's face. The coconut falling out of the window.
I guess that's something that I hadn't necessarily considered this whole time, is that writing is not just the words that we get to hear.
Yep.
It's... Ain't writing, it... planning for the movie, just planning the sequences and all that.
Yeah, that moment where Rico is so used to living on the street that he's stealing the free food at the party, and they're like, you don't need to steal that, it's free.
Yeah. All right, if we take that into account, then I can give you Midnight Cowboy.
I mean, I still think Oliver wins, but...
So after all this?
I was just trying...
After all this, you're going to go for Oliver?
I'm just trying to give Midnight Cowboy its due.
And giving me crap, at the same time for not liking it?
I mean, Oliver's got those amazing lines in it. About living proof that crime does pay, and Bill Sykes, you ever heard the sound a chicken makes when you wring its neck? Can't say that I have, Bill.
All right.
Yeah.
Oliver, then?
Oliver. The only prop you will ever hear me give to a work of Dickens. And then we move on to quote of the decade. Starting off with a quote from Oliver. "Shut up and drink your gin," says Mr. Fagin to a 10-year-old.
"They're always throwing goodness at you, but with a little bit of luck, a man can duck." From My Fair Lady.
Yep. "A little bit of luck, a man can duck. They call me Mr. Tibbs." From The Heat of the Night.
"There's a great mass, Thomas." From A Man for All Seasons.
"And you gave me hate." From West Side Story.
Do I have the knife first?
Whoever has the...
Go ahead.
Whoever we think has the knife has the knife.
Go ahead. I'm thinking about it.
Then I would cut "They call me Mr. Tibbs."
What?
An iconic line, but...
What?
It feels too much like the right choice.
What's wrong with the right choice?
It's so boring. It's so pedestrian. Get it away.
That's the most... That would have been one of my, top three.
It didn't. I get it. I understand why.
It's so good in the moment. The delivery is so good.
Yes, it just didn't. It didn't resonate with me as personally as the other stuff on this list.
Oh my god.
I'm a monster.
What doesn't resonate with you, apart from, being treated with human decency?
We've already established that we're both monsters.
Speak for yourself.
I mean, if you want me to take something else, I could do "Shut Up and Drink Your Gin," because as much as I love it, it's the goof choice.
Yeah, I would go for that first.
"Shut up and drink your gin."
Yes.
Might be the biggest laugh I got this whole decade.
Let's take that off.
All right, what are you going to cut?
"With a little bit of luck, a man can duck."
Oh, my God.
That's another goof line.
It's so good, though. What's wrong with goofs? Why do we always have to be staring into the abyss?
This is a line about how men should avoid being with women just because women give them a little bit of goodness.
No. There's a whole separate line about women. This is just general, the world is trying to get you to be a good person, and you can fuck all that nonsense and have a drink.
Yeah, so this is a goof line.
Life is too important to be taken seriously. That's what this line is. Fine. It's a goof. It was never going to win. It's the people's champion. So we have "They Call Me Mr. Tibbs," "There's a Great Mass," and "You Gave Me Hate."
Yeah.
Because we had to be all dark and serious about this. Where's the eternally shifting knife?
I think it's yours now.
Mine. "They call me Mr. Tibbs. Get rid of it."
You're a monster.
It's too boring. Leaving us with "There is a great mass, Thomas," and "You gave me hate." Both existentially weighty lines. You know which one we use in our day-to-day lives. That is depressingly applicable to nearly everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
We could have had a sunshiny quote of the decade. We could have lived in rainbows and happiness. But here we are.
I mean, "You gave me hate" is such a clever...
They're both insightful.
Yeah, it's so insightful for the movie. It's like the perfect summary of the movie at the end.
Yep.
It's so iconic.
Both are dealing with the nature of...
Yeah, the nature...
The darkness in humanity.
Exactly.
Yep.
Exactly.
The nature of our ignorance in different ways.
Yeah. If this, the particular timing also of You Gave Me Hate, if it had come out at any other point in the movie, it wouldn't have had as much weight as it does at the end, I think.
Yeah, while she's pointing a gun at people.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, the choice.
She just lost the guy she just she fell in love with, and she's, you know, trying to bring everybody to have some sort of sense.
Well, let's examine this and consider which one is worse. Because in the You Gave Me Hate, it was the choices you made led to this. This was the tragedy, is it was completely avoidable, right?
Right.
Whereas with King Henry and There Is a Great Mass, the dread is there is that this is unavoidable and there is nothing that can change it or ever will. This is just the nature of humanity.
Well, isn't it also the dreadful nature of humanity that, you know, people can't fucking go past racism?
Yes, but it's like, it's avoidable and you can make different choices. With King Henry, there's no choice that can ever be made that will fix this. There is some tiny glimmer of hope in the You Gave Me Hate.
Because you can try to educate racism out of people.
You can choose to give something else.
Yeah.
The mass is eternal. Where,
yeah. That's the true tragedy here, is that there will always be masses to like follow whatever shit is trendy or...
Yeah, King Henry was saying that back in, what was that, the 1500s?
Yeah.
And it's just as true as when he said it.
Yeah. So we've determined which one is, which one reflects the worst quality of humanity. Does that mean that it's the quote of the decade?
I think our quote of the decade is that there is a great mass, Thomas. One that will crush us all.
Oh my god. One that will probably still resonate in like decades, millennia from now.
Yep. Some truths are eternal, and unfortunately this is one of them. This is a weight we must all bear for eternity.
Oh gosh. Goodness. All right.
Well, now we're moving
leading
on.
Into the worst moment of the decade.
Even deeper into the abyss with the worst moment of the decade. Yeah,
bear with us, audience.
Starting with Anita being lynched. Yay! In West Side Story.
Then the suicide attempt in the apartment.
Splashing water in that poor dog's face in Tom Jones.
The end of My Fair Lady when Mr. Higgins says, "Get me my slippers.
Get me my slippers, bitch," and doesn't apologize for anything. Then in the heat of the night when they're driving through the plantation and Officer Gillespie turns to Virgil and says, "None of that for you, huh, Virgil?"
Yep. A separate moment also is Mr. Endicott's speech
about how,
in The Heat of the Night.
Yeah, black people need to be cultivated, just like these plants. The Nightmare from Midnight Cowboy.
You might remind people what the nightmare is?
The black and white, heavily cut up sequence where it's the trauma between him and Crazy Annie, where they get discovered in the truck and pulled out and both of them get raped by a crowd.
Yep. Rico dying in Midnight Cowboy.
And then the bathroom scene in My Fair Lady, which is just a clusterfuck of her screeching. The audio I played in that episode.
Yeah.
That just goes on for way too long.
You're giving me the knife first?
Yeah.
You're not gonna like what I'm gonna take out. Splashing water in the dog's face.
Yeah, I mean, it stands out to me because it's an actual moment of abuse. It's not simulated abuse. It's someone being shitty to an animal.
Yeah,
and yeah, sucks.
But in that crowd of like awful scenes, it's not the worst.
A minor abuse, if such a thing exists.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
It sucks because like dogs and animals in general just
they're
innocent. they don't have a way to talk back. They don't have a way to always like defend themselves.
Nope, they're innocent.
Yeah.
So they just function as a punching bag for evil people. All right. Then I'll take off the bath scene because it's more of an honorable mention.
It's an annoying scene, but it's not the worst either. It's the worst
in that movie. Well, not even in that movie.
It's the worst for our ears.
Yeah. But does not stack up.
Yeah. Again, if we're just by comparison to some of the like real sadness and abuse that happen in other scenes, I think I'm gonna take out the end of My Fair Lady. It's shitty. You wish that she wouldn't go back to him, and you wish for him to apologize and all that, but
left an incredibly bad taste.
Yeah, it left a bad taste in our mouths, but it's not the worst.
It's one of the most sour endings to a movie I've seen.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right.
It's more like it's disgusting psychologically
that he got away with it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she's choosing to go back to it. Yep. Gross, but not gross enough. The suicide attempt in the apartment. That's what I'll take off.
Yeah, it's kind of treated as a trivial thing, which makes it gross. And it's more also of the development that happens between the characters after the suicide attempt.
Yep.
But
an instance of self-harm is not as deplorable as the active hatred in these other instances on the list.
I mean, it still sucks to see a woman or a character in general just so desperate that the only way out of that situation that they can think of is killing themselves. Like, it's horrible to imagine that this is the only way out you can think of.
Everything on this list is bad.
Yes.
Just some are more bad. There are degrees of awfulness is what we've learned.
It's my turn?
Yeah, I took off the suicide attempt.
Oh, gosh. So we're left with Anita being lynched. The none of that for you, Virgil.
Yeah, the heat of the night stuff. The nightmare, Rico dying. It's all bad.
I kind of want to take Rico dying because it's sad.
Yeah.
It's sad more than it is awful.
Yeah, I kind of just, it was my idea to put it on the list, and I wanted to bring it up here because we did not emphasize in that particular episode how just grim it is when the camera backs out and you just see him wedged against the window with his eyes just open and glassy and staring. Yeah. Fuck, what a depressing ending.
Yeah. It's the way that this is set up, too. Like, A, it's sad that he dies right there, right when they're arriving in Florida.
But also, you know it's going to happen.
You know it's going to happen.
Yeah.
But it's the way it's filmed, too. Like you said, you see him wedge against the window. But it gets turned into a spectacle.
Yep.
Like, you have shots of people in the bus, you know, turning around and examining what's happening. And it's
all the busybodies.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So sad and awful, but more sad.
Yeah, the thing he was afraid of in his life, him being a laughingstock.
Yeah.
Yep, that was his final moments. Oy.
Again, the disgusting nature of humanity.
Yep. All right, my turn. I'm going to take off the nightmare from Midnight Cowboy. Because as bad as it was, like, the editing is such that you need to actually put some thought into it.
Right.
To figure out what's going on.
Right.
So it's not as in your face and blatant as some of the other stuff.
Which doesn't mean that rape is not awful, because it absolutely is. But just visually, it's not as striking, I guess, as maybe some of those other moments on the list.
Yeah. You can kind of, if you don't think about it, you can kind of shield yourself from it.
Yeah.
In a way.
You can almost kind of like blink and miss it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not as direct as some of the other stuff.
Yeah. I can see that.
It's more uncomfortable.
We're coming into dangerous territory. I think I'm going to take off the none of that for you, Virgil.
Yeah, of the two on this list from that movie, it's the lesser.
It's still, it sucks. It's still blatantly racist. And just, it's almost like it sounds like he's blaming the character for not being in the fields.
It's glib. Yeah, glib racism.
Yeah.
Where it's almost like he's trying to make a joke out of it and be pally about it.
Yeah, he's definitely making a joke out of it and like, look at the people in the field. It could have been you.
Yeah.
But it's not.
Compared to Mr. Endicott's speech, though.
Yeah, compared to Mr. Endicott's speech, it's like, it's on...
So we've come down to Mr. Endicott's speech versus Anita being lynched.
Yeah.
I think I'd go with Anita being lynched, because that's...
That's violent as fuck.
Yes, violent assault by a group of people. Racism being put into action is worse than a racist speech, right?
I mean, they both suck.
Yes.
But
every moment is terrible, but there are degrees of terribleness. Yeah. I would rather have somebody make a racist speech at me than try to lynch me.
Yeah, that one, the Anita being lynched was graphic. It was physically violent.
Yep.
You're there. There's no skipping the scene. You're there for the entire thing.
Yep.
You see her struggle. You see, like, if you're really looking at the scene, you can see also the actress struggling through the scene. So it's not just the act of violence that's done against her character, but it's, you can see almost like real fear on her face. She's alone.
Yeah.
She's literally alone on that set as a woman against a group of like over 10 guys. And the actress herself is also Puerto Rican, I think. So there's, I don't know, there's just violence on multiple levels here. Yeah,
mental and physical violence be enacted as a group activity upon a single person.
Yeah.
Yep. The mob descends upon its helpless target.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was brutal, it was ugly, it was awful. It was the worst moment of the decade.
It was really uncomfortable to watch.
Anita being lynched, the worst moment of the decade.
And now let's end with the best moment of the decade. Yep. Let's end on a good note.
Back into the sunshine with Fagin and Artful Dodger walking out into the sunset at the end of Oliver.
Yeah.
Living proof that crime does pay.
Mr. Tibbs giving a slap to Mr. Endicott in the heat of the night.
The Reverend Mother encouraging Maria to go back to the captain and declare her love in the Sound of Music.
Mm-hmm. The actor who played Gomez Adams, keeping the peace at the dance in West Side Story.
Yes, Gomez Adams appearing out of the crowd and keeping the peace. And then, finally, the camels being shocked at their own impending doom in Lawrence of Arabia. We considered, even talked about making a category of best animal for this decade, but there just weren't enough animals to do that. So we had to give the camels their due some way. That they talk about, and the camels might not survive this, and then one just goes, huh? What the fuck? That's not what the contract said. Yeah, those camels really stole the show.
That being said, it's probably not the best moment of the day. Ah,
those camels were so good.
If you and I are honest, we both know which moment
We gotta maintain the illusion.
My turn to take the... I mean, I'm gonna knife the camels.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. Yeah, their own impending doom in many different ways.
Yeah. Sorry, camels.
My hurt revenge, I'm going to take out the Reverend Mother.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
It's more of a like heartwarming moment to me. It's not necessarily the best moment of the decade, but it's heartwarming.
I was not even the best moment in that movie.
No, but I also love the song that's associated with that scene, the Climb Every Mountain.
Yeah, when she tries to break the windows.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, what are you going to get rid of?
Gomez Adams.
It's a goof. Get rid of the slap first.
No, it's a goof.
Give Gomez the silver.
This only made it to the list as a goof.
I love Gomez.
I know you do. Either way, it's going to get knifed out.
Yeah. It's just for the history books, for the record. Gomez gets bronze.
Yes.
Fine. Better than I had any right to hope for, I suppose.
I think so.
So then the slap gets silver because the best moment of this decade was Fagin and Artful Dodger. Not even fucking close.
Yes, yeah, sorry, Mr. Tibbs. The slap was sort of a... It was a satisfying moment.
Yeah. Civil rights, racial progress. Yeah, whatever. Look at these two fucking criminals. Tap dancing into the sunset. This is amazing.
Living proof that crime pays.
Yeah. Partners till our dying day. Okay. Living proof that crime does pay. And then they dance into the sunset.
Yeah.
Oh, incredible. What did you think of the decade overall?
I mean, we've talked about this both on the podcast and off mic, but it was very hit and miss for me.
I agree.
I think the 50s was the most consistent decade so far in terms of movies that we liked. But this one was, very inconsistent. Writing is improving. Camera techniques are improving. There's more experimentation. So all of that is nice to see. And I'm waiting for the 70s to see how it's going to evolve. And if we're really going to get like a 70s feel.
Yeah.
In those movies. Because some of the movies, there were a lot of like era pieces.
Yeah, here, we spent a lot of time in Europe.
We spent a lot of time in Europe, yes.
Yeah, this whole decade felt more like growing pains. Like the caterpillar, you can feel it struggling in the cocoon to break out and be something more than just these fucking 3-hour-long musicals with their enormous costume budgets. And these childish fables about how all is good and pure in the world and actually deal with the grim, bleak nature of what reality is for a lot of people.
Yeah. So I'm really hoping that the 70s are going to be even more experimental in like all areas, writing, filming techniques, and all that.
Yeah, let's keep that momentum for Midnight Cowboy going.
Yeah.
More drugs. More camera editing, more weird parties, more changing aspect ratios, more traumatic flashbacks, more neon lights. Yep. God's sakes, no more musicals, please. For a decade at least. Give us a break. Don't drown out social issues with catchy tunes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Martin Luther King starts making a speech. Get me to the church on time. Pull out the stopper. Let's have a Whopper. Yeah.
It gave us a lot to talk about.
Yeah. It did not live up to its full psychedelic potential, but there are glimmers of it.
Yeah.
The Academy just needs to let go of the past. Just stop. Just let go of it. And we can move on and fulfill the potential of this medium.
Well, you're forgetting also that the Hays Code was still in place until 68.
Yeah. So we are finally free of those shackles.
Yeah. If we're going to get any, living potential, it's going to come in the 70s.
We're going to have a category next year of best nudity. Here come the boobs and butts.
Yep.
very uneven. The highs were high and the lows were low. We got stuff near the top of my list and we got stuff at the very bottom this decade.
Yeah.
Yeah, fucking Tom Jones. What a bizarre piece of shit that was.
That, I don't understand how movies like this get greenlit.
Yeah, much less rewarded.
Yeah. Who the heck thought that this was a good idea for a movie? It's just baffling.
Yeah, it was almost like the Academy had some sort of psychotic break. And they just...
Yeah, they were looking for something different.
Yeah. Just what can we do to ignore everything else and just let's find the most puerile, juvenile nonsense we can elevate. It's art, goddammit, it's art. And then first movie of the 70s will be a war movie, so maybe no progress at all.
Yep.
All right.
And that would be Patton.
We go down the categories and winners one last time.
Sounds good.
Close out the decade.
All right, so best male character went to Fagin and Oliver.
Mr. Fagin, the Rat King himself. The best female character went to Maria from The Sound of Music.
The worst male character went to Mr. Endicott in The Heat of the Night.
And the worst female character went in to Dolores Purdy, also from The Heat of the Night. Did not realize until now, the worst... male and female characters.
Yep.
Cramming in the shittiness.
Best visuals overall went to Oliver.
Best visual specific scene also went to Oliver in Bill Sykes' shadow on the wall as he enters the movie.
Most stylish went to Midnight Cowboy.
Best song was Split. And for me, I gave it to Get Me to the Church on Time from My Fair Lady.
And I give it to I Have Confidence in Me from The Sound of Music.
Best writing went to Oliver.
The quote of the decade went to Man for All Seasons for There is a Great Mass, Thomas.
Don't you mean plain white rice? The worst moment of the decade was Anita being lynched in West Side Story.
And the best moment of the decade went to Fagin and Artful Dodger walking out into the sunset.
In Oliver.
Yes.
Oliver got a lot.
Yeah.
Oliver was, one of the most surprising movies of this decade.
Yeah.
Going in, had zero expectations. Oh God, it's Dickens. And then completely blown away by how good it was. And I think with that we also will walk off into the sunset.
Yes.
For this year. This will be the last episode of this year.
Because the holidays are coming.
Yep. Relatives are coming. The holidays are coming. Presents, Christmas. You know how it is.
Yep.
We have to set up the traps for Santa. And so next year, we'll be starting the year off. New year, new decade. As we enter into the 70s.
Yes.
But until then, thanks everybody for listening.
Have a good end of the year. Happy holidays to everyone.
Yes, happy non-denominational winter solstice festival.
Exactly. Bye.
Bye.
Okay, that's it.